Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we're going to discuss how TV reboots are all the rage, a pair of really heavy losses in entertainment, and a shocking series ending, but not shocking how you might think. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow ho, Troy Heinrichs.
I forgot my name.
I forgot, too. I thought Amanda was here, and I remembered that she could not be here. We had to make some emergency switches ruse this week. So just Troy and I. Sorry, everybody. Or congratulations. You won.
That's right. Because you get the Troy and Aaron show. Everybody loves those episodes.
You can always rate and subscribe on your preferred podcast app, of course, or go to The Hollywood Outsider. .com. And I want to ask you right off the bat, the Toy Story 5 trailer dropped. Technology, for anybody that doesn't know, this is where Buzz and Woody and Jesse and the rest of the gang, their jobs are challenged when they come face to face with Lilypad, who's voiced by Greta Lee, a brand new tablet device that arrives at her own disruptive ideas about what is best for their kid, Bonnie. So now we're dealing with tablet technology versus old school toys. Are you still excited for this franchise? Because I still say should have ended at 3.
I mean, I was on the ended at 3, and then that's like, oh, but toys are timeless. Like, I still play with Legos that I had when I was a kid. Like, I'm like rebuilding like the original, you know, thanks to the Lego movie.
So do most serial killers.
Spaceship, you know? So like, I have that original Lego 1980s spaceship set. So like, I can rebuild that. Like, I think it's timeless. So to do a new trilogy with Bonnie, I think that makes sense. At the same time, now we're dealing with Bonnie as a Gen Alpha type child who has this technology in her life. And I think it's a really interesting story to tell, to be honest. Whether that gives you the same warm and fuzzy feelings that a Toy Story movie would normally give you, good question. I think that'll be the remains to be seen if this will be enough to get us the final movie for the Bonnie trilogy.
But you're excited, aren't you?
I think it's an important artistic story to tell about should we be spending a lot of times on early technology with children or still have them actually use their minds for critical thinking and things of this nature. So like from that perspective, I think it's art wise, it's a great story to explore. Whether it's in this franchise to do that exploration, that seems a little bit interesting. But I suppose if you're talking about toys being timeless, why not a better place to tell that story? I still love the characters. I still love to see the adventures. So I'm in for the ride.
Did you see, speaking of technology, did you see that AI video of Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise fighting that everybody was up in an uproar about? Did you see that?
That's pretty good.
I got to say.
I also saw the Transformers movie that was made with the Dinobots, a $200 million movie made in literally a half an hour on AI.
And I mean, there was also an all AI short that some AMC theaters were playing, and they said, no, we're not doing this. We're not going to display that. So AI is coming, man, whether you want it to or not. I mean, they're even coming for the Cruise now. Look out, Cruise. Go ahead. Do your own stunts. They're going to do them better. It was a little scary, man. It was a little creepy. It was definitely looked deep faked, but it was getting closer. I mean, every step is getting a little closer. So Woody and Buzz better look out.
Well, we were talking about that, though, about the whole like short form, you know, watch the videos, right? TikTok, people are scrolling and all that stuff. And if I can make something that looks halfway decent on mobile, you know,
people will be happy. They're going to get fooled even more. My mom and dad already are.
Yeah, we appreciate the actors and them having a salary and a job and a career and the movie camera and the studio and the set people and all that, because that's how we grew up, right? Mm-hmm. But we all know that it's all about the dollar. So if I can get someone to watch a screen, even if it's fake shit, I still make money the American way.
All right, well, let's move on to some really, really sad news. This is probably going to hit you more than, not more than me. I've actually grown to really kind of love Eric Dane, especially his more recent performances. Euphoria, I mean, I know he was a great villain in Bad Boys, one of the Bad Boys sequels, as well as in Countdown, which I didn't love Countdown, but he was really good in it. Like, I would have liked to have seen that show continue because there were some opportunities there, I thought. But man, but you know him as McSteamy, right? Wasn't that the character reference in Grey's Anatomy?
Got it. I'm impressed. Good job.
Yeah. He got ALS, or he was diagnosed with ALS like a year ago, I think. I mean, it wasn't very long ago. And he just passed away right before we recorded this. So I'm assuming that hits you a little harder. You're a longtime Grey's Anatomy fan. I don't know if there's anything you want to say about it, but I mean, he seemed like a really impressive actor.
Yeah, Dane was great on the show, right? He had a nice quid pro quo balance to McDreamy versus McSteamy and everything that went on with that. But Eric's been off the show for a long time at this point on the Grey's side. So mm-hmm. I'm actually more impressed with him as an actor from the Euphoria stint that he did. This like really hard ass dad who also was dealing with his own kind of sexual deviances and the way he wanted to approach life and the things that he was into. It was like that character was so complex, and just the way he went out was just oof. So yeah, it's interesting to watch his career go from one thing to like something completely different in the range that he had. And because of that, I think it's going to be a great loss, because he's somebody that could be seasoned enough as the years go along for another 20 years to be a really good powerhouse actor that we won't have because of this debilitating illness. And it's just sad that we can make AI Transformers videos and AI Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, but we can't cure ALS.
That's the terrible part. Yeah, that really is a terrible part. I mean,
the right word, but I'm fascinated by the fact that we can't cure this shit. You know,
I'm irritated by it.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely irritated by it. I mean, cancer, I mean, anything, of course, where there's money in the medicine as opposed to the cure, I suppose. Maybe that's a very cynical way to look at things, but I'm going to look at them that way. It's just, I think what hit me the hardest is how quickly he deteriorated. I mean, Countdown came out last summer, which, you know, filmed maybe within the past year after that. So, and he, you could tell there was some issues, but he was fine. He was very mobile and very involved, and he seemed, and then you flash forward like 6 months and he's already like just deteriorating so fast. It's just a brutal, brutal disease, and life's not always fair.
Yeah. I mean, even when you get to the end of life on some people, like my mother-in-law is going through it right now. Like we had her birthday just recently, and like in just a, you know, 6 week, 10 week period, like the decline in just that 6 to 10 weeks has been pretty drastic.
It's just brutal. Really, really sending our thoughts out to the family. That's just so quick. And at 53 years old, 53.
Yeah, that's the thing that scares me, because I'm young. Like, we're close to that spot, and it's like, I could get hit by a bus tomorrow, you know? It's like,
live every day like it's the best day, man.
That's right.
Yep, but good. You know, I think what I feel career-wise, right, just from an entertainment perspective, it's horrible to lose him. It's more important that his family is grieving, and that side of it is obviously the more impactful for everyone involved. But if I'm looking at it as an entertainment podcast coming across from his career, I thought he's made some of the more interesting work that he's done in the last 10 years. And I think he was probably headed towards some really interesting places had this not affected.
Yeah, because you can have actors who are really good at, say, comedy or drama or crying or whatever it would end up being. Sure. And they get pigeonholed into doing that same type of character their entire careers. And here Eric is jumping all over the board. And yeah, it could have been really fascinating to see what he had been able to do had he not had this debilitating illness.
Now the second one, and I'm not going to make any bones about it. This hit me harder, but mostly because I think, you know, when you're talking about people that pass away, right? There are some actors that just hit you harder than a lot of the other ones, because I mean, people pass away in our lives and everything else, and some become like family. And this Robert Duvall, I know he's 95, but to me, he's like family. I can't tell you how many times this guy popped up in something I loved over the years. And he's always just been one of the best actors to ever do it. And what I mean by that is there are a lot of actors who are great at showy performances, right? They just come in and they can, Kevin Spacey's great at, you know, I know we're not allowed to say Kevin Spacey's name, by God, but he can come in and he can just the gravitas and the anger and the rage and just throw it out there. Denzel Washington, probably one of, if not the best actor working today, you know, those kinds of, Meryl Streep, of course, out there just crushing it with dramatic flair. Robert Duvall had the ability, and I think it's an innate ability to be real, to be genuine, to always come across as though we know this guy. Whatever he's playing, we know this guy. Even if it's in a movie like Gone in 60 Seconds or Reacher, which are just very, you know, blockbustery types of films. Even in those, he felt like a guy I knew, like a guy I could hang out with or have a beer with or just sit there and BS with. Like, Robert Duvall is one of the best to ever do it. Now, he could do the extreme performances as well. Go watch Apocalypse Now. But when it came to just genuine performances of being real and present and in the moment, one of the best to ever do it.
I almost felt like he was like a second dad, you know, yeah, especially growing up in the 90s. You know, Days of Thunder, Newsies, Deep Impact. There's that great scene where he's just, you know, sitting there in the spaceship, right? And he's like reading a story and kind of reflecting on his life to the other actor who got injured, right? In Deep Impact. I know everybody watches Armageddon instead of Deep Impact. But Deep Impact is actually a really good movie, for those that don't know. It's just because they were out at the same time.
I'm an Armageddon guy.
It's just because they were out at the same time, you know?
I'm an Armageddon guy.
Deep Impact was real. Like, this is how it would really feel. You know, people wouldn't actually survive.
I disagree. I would cry if it was Bruce Willis going, I'd be crying. I'd be sad too. It'd be sad times. That was real to me.
But yeah, Duvall is just, he's in everything. You know, like, you can't like picture Robert Duvall not being on the silver screen. And that is just a loss. That's just going to be like, oh, you know, you won't have that. I can remember him in Newsies, just that. Angered he was, as you know, playing Willie Randolph Hearst in that movie. And like, you just the character expression, the facial expressions, and he's got that like that tenderheartedness, wrap your arm around you, and then he'll like scream and yell at you at the same moment, you know. And it's just, yeah, he's a natural, and he was in The Natural as well.
Love the smell of napalm in the morning. He was in Lonesome Dove, I think, is something that many people, I think that's the one that people quoted the most. We had a post on Facebook on a Hollywood Outsider page that kind of went viral where, man, that was the one I asked, you know, what is your favorite Robert Duvall performance? Lonesome Dove. Almost, I think it was like 60% of the picks, which surprised the hell out of me. Cause I pulled this up, right? I went through and I'm just like, all right, by decade, cause he's been acting since the 60s, right? So long freaking time. 95, great life. He's had a great life. It's kind of the opposite of Eric Dane's situation, right? Eric Dane, way too young, taken too soon. Robert Duvall lived about as long as you would expect a human being to live. He just made the most of it. But here's some of the movies, right? 60s, The Kill a Mockingbird, Bullet, True Grit. The 70s, MASH, THX 1138, Joe Kidd, Network, The Conversation. The 80s, The Natural, freaking great movie. True Confessions, Colors with John Penn. The 90s, Days of Thunder. I'm mentioning it. It deserves a mention. Falling Down, The Paper, Deep Impact, like you mentioned. The 2000s, Secondhand Lions, Open Range, Crazy Heart, and of course, you know, Jack Reacher, 12 Mighty Orphans, and several other movies. Like, he's been in so many. I couldn't even. And he won an Oscar for Tender Mercies, I do believe. But just such a phenomenal actor, phenomenal talent, breaks my heart. But in that way that we should celebrate his life, not really mourn him, because this guy's given us so much over the years, you know?
Yeah. It's a shame that he only actually won one Academy Award, when you really think about it.
Deserved 40. But there's a lot of actors like that. He reminds me very much of Gene Hackman. Gene Hackman had that ability too, where he could just come into a room and he made you feel like you knew him, you know? Only Gene Hackman could be a lot more intense.
Definitely.
God, I got to go watch Mississippi Burning again. I love Mississippi Burning.
Yeah, right. Seven nominations total, three of them for best actor in the 80s. Oh, no, two 80s, one 90s. The Apostle is in the 90s. Yeah.
Apostle is really a surprisingly good movie. I don't really watch much in terms of religious films, but that's pretty interesting. All right. So let's move on to something that's wild. Just wild. I'm trying not to laugh because it's not fair. I love both of these ladies, okay?
Again, money.
Yes.
Money is the way of America.
I understand. But two legends, UFC, MMA, however you want to phrase it.
We're calling them legends.
Gina Carano, I will call a legend. Ronda Rousey's a legend. Like, they did their...
In the sport, yeah.
Champions, I suppose, yeah. In their sport in the day. So sure. Ronda Rousey and Gina Carano are returning to the cage to battle each other. And it's going to stream live on Netflix on May 16th, 2026. And if this was 2010, boy, would I be excited. It's not, though.
Well, in 2010, you wouldn't be able to see it because Netflix was still a baby at that time. Network's a little bit better now, so it's something you could actually see.
Look, I'm happy for both of them. I mean, go get that money. Go get that money. Everybody else is. If Jake Paul's jackass self can get some, you guys deserve it. You guys pioneered the sport, especially for women. Gina Carano, when it comes to ass kickery, like, she was a beast in the ring. And Ronda Rousey was for a while, and then she had a couple bad fights back-to-back that just kind of sullied her career, I guess, or sullied her record. But, man, I still want to watch it. I still want to watch. You don't want to see this at all, do you?
I would watch it, you know, same way I watched, what was it, the Tyson fight? It's like, people just could come back and do what you want to do to get the money, you know?
Damn it. I'm going to watch it. I have to. But yeah, it's a little, I think it's past the prime. That's all. But I also thought Mike Tyson was past his prime, and it became like this really crazy event. And then you watched it and you said, oh, Mike. Now, at least these ladies, I mean, I think fans of theirs have been wanting them to fight for a long time. So you finally get it. All right.
I'm excited.
No, you're not.
If you're gonna have a primetime event on Netflix, like, let's make it an event. You know, this is an event. Let's see, you know, if older people can still move and bend the way they used to 10 years ago.
They're going to be so sore the next day. They're just going to be so sore.
Yeah, the whole thing is brought to you by Excedrin or Advil or Tylenol.
Oh, ouch. All right. Well, here's something that was a shocking development. Okay. So the season 3 finale for the Hulu show Tell Me Lies came on, right? And I think everybody that's a fan, diehard fans, really, really expected this to lead into a season 4 renewal. Like, that was going to happen at some point. But instead, Megan Oppenheimer, who is the showrunner, confirmed on Instagram right as the series finale or season finale aired that this is actually the series finale. Now, I never watched the show, so I don't really have a thought on this particular show, but it's still very popular. It has still been very popular, so I think it easily could have been renewed. But I'm wondering, what do you think about this concept of, instead of us having all this hype, like we just had with Stranger Things and people felt let down and everything else for it being a series finale, what do you think about this just dropping this bomb on fans the night it airs?
I mean, if I was that way, I think it's a great way to have the media cycle coverage on it. You know, there's probably some reason why this ended up being the series finale, because maybe they weren't renewed. And then this was the way that.
She said this is the way she always intended it. It was to end, like, this is the stopping point. They felt like this was a natural stopping point, and fans were clamoring for another season. And they said, no, this is it. We're done.
Yeah. You know, it depends on who owns rights and properties. You can always reboot it. You can do a whole bunch of stuff with it. You know,
answer my question. Do you like it better that they just dropped it like this, as opposed to all the hype about the series finale this week or da 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 da? And so people are just like, oh shit, that's it. That's the end versus the hype.
This is the first time I've really felt like it happened this way. So I don't have an opinion one way or the other. It's actually kind of cool if you think about it, because you can be like, yeah, this is it. And it's like, oh great, now that it's done, I can go actually go watch it, because I know it's 3 seasons and I don't have to catch up on 6. Drives people to the streaming platform to see what the buzz is about. So it's good for the streaming platform, I guess.
Would you like it if it was one of your favorite shows?
I mean, it kind of happened to us with Westworld in a way.
Well, no, that's different. It wasn't renewed. They planned it. This was going to be the finale the whole time.
That's fine. I could say anything is planned to be that way when it's over.
You really don't believe this, do you? You don't believe that this was the plan.
I mean, typically, if it's the plan, you have the thing like.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it's different.
Right. It's like Damon Lindelof and Carlton Kier. Like, the plan was to do 3 more seasons. That was the plan. The plan was to do 8 for the Blacklist or whatever. You know, it's like the plan is always a plan until it's not the plan anymore. Plans change.
But this plan didn't change.
According to her, right? Which was the creator.
Don't believe her at all.
I believe it's over.
Troy just called you a liar, Megan.
I believe it's over.
Well, I like it. Here's my thought. I love this.
I think it's great marketing the way she did it. That's what I think. This will drive people to watch the show.
True. Drove people to check out the finale. Probably, maybe no catch up. There. Yeah. But I Would love this with a lot of my shows. I would love to be watching a show and well, I haven't heard it. I haven't heard that it was getting renewed. That's crazy. And then you're watching them like, bam, that's the finale. I think it just takes away that level of hype. And I think when you come, when it comes to certain things, if you're a huge fan of something like, you know, Tell Me Lies, like those fans are pretty passionate and you know, the end is coming. You is a big one, right? Those fans are very passionate and there's just like no ending that's going to suffice. I mean, it's always kind of disappointing when they have a fan base that's very rabid, if you will. It's very hard to make those people happy. Dexter took three swings to get that ending nailed perfect.
Because I think for me, I live a philosophy in my life where I don't expect anything. Because if I expect something to happen, I've already conjured up in my brain what the thing is that I want, right? Mm-hmm. Which 9 times out of 10 is just going to lead to disappointment. So don't expect anything. Just go with the flow, see what happens. So in this case, people didn't expect this to be the finale. So they can just enjoy the season 3 finale and then be like, whoa, it's done? Oh, well, that was pretty damn good. Or they can be like, man, I wish I wanted more because it was really damn good. And then it's really damn good. Instead of people still bitching about Game of Thrones Lost and insert TV show year 20 years later. Because they were disappointed on what they thought they wanted for an ending.
I mean, I really do think when you take out the hype and it just, bam, happens, you're just forced to deal with the fact that it's over. As opposed to, I had all these ideas in my head of where it was going to go, and it didn't go where I wanted it to go, so it's terrible. Which is what happens with a lot of passionate fan bases. But sometimes, Troy, they freaking nail it. And Dexter Resurrection, yeah, that one nailed it. So if you didn't know, the Bay Harbor Butcher is back, and so is your next binge, because Dexter Resurrection season 1 is now available, DVD, Blu-ray, and digital. And I have to tell you, if you haven't seen this one yet, go freaking see it. This is, I think, the best season of Dexter since the first season. Like, it's that good.
And that's the way it should be, right? You start on a high note, you end on a high note. That's the way it should go.
I love the ending. If I never see another episode, which I will, I'll watch season 2 because they're doing it, I would be so happy. Because I just love the ending. Love it. It's like, ends like Batman. Awesome. And also, our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets. Patreon helps fans support the favorite podcasts. If you want to help, you can go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Now, I want to go to our topic. Our topic this week is a little kind of all over the place because we're talking about some TV reboots that are popping up again. And we're getting a lot of them. Like, a lot of them all at once. You can tell network TV in particular is really struggling to bring people back to, you know, I think we just talked about this last week, right? With streaming versus cable, that whole episode. So they're doing what they can. So TV reboots are popping up all over and wanted to discuss a few of these. Wanted to start with this upcoming Harry Potter reboot for HBO Max, which is planning to do a book a season, if you didn't know that. And Daniel Radcliffe, who was the original Harry Potter, for anyone who doesn't know, had a request for the press moving forward, which I thought was interesting. When these kids got cast, he said, there's a whole thing around the internet, around the world, people being like, we've got to look after these kids. And I was like, if you mean that, if everyone really means what they are saying, then one of the things you can do for me, for him, is not ask about me and Rupert Grint all the time. I would like not to be weird spectral phantoms in these children's lives and just to let them like get on it because it's going to be a new thing. And I just wanted to kind of know, I really like that he said that. Do you think it's fair, kids or not, to constantly compare reboots to the originals when they are in fact trying to be a new thing?
Yeah, I think when you compare the two series, again, it's like the whole setting up your expectation for failure. Like, these people did their time, they did their show, they did their movies, they did the whatever. Like, leave them alone. Let them enjoy retirement, if you will. And let's focus on the new
retirement.
People.
Retirement.
You don't think they could have retired after all that money?
Yeah, yeah. One movie made more than both of us combined in our lives, probably. Yeah.
I think the Whomping Willow Tree made more money than we did. Let's talk about the new kids. Talk about the people that are involved in the current production. Right? Like, that's where we should be focusing our time. Why did we decide to do a book a year for the TV series? Why did we get the actors we did? Why did we choose the locations we did? Let's focus on the existing series and not worry about what came before. What came before will always be there. We can go back and talk about it at the 30, 50, 70 year reunion, if we will. But yeah, let's talk about the new people.
And I think it's fair to initially react to, well, I don't like that. I watched this episode. I don't like it as much as the movies, and then let it go. But if you're constantly comparing this new trio of actors to the previous trio of actors, it's really not fair. I mean, they should be able to stand on their, see if they stand on their own feet as the new Harry Potter, the new Hermione, the new whatever. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, move on. You know, I get what he's saying, and it's already tough enough for kids in that business to kind of grow up with the constant camera always on them, no matter where they go, and growing up in that limelight. So I get what he's saying.
Let also, them be kids too. It's a horrible comparison because
it's different, movies completely different.
Are a different art form than television. Television has the ability to go 10, 12, 22 episodes and do that long form content. It's why Dark Tower sucked compared to the books, and why they need to make it a TV series in order to do it justice, because you should be comparing it to the books, because the books will give you more depth, more detail, more environment. So the TV show can now expand on those things and be closer to the books than the movies ever were. So, but I know that a lot of people got introduced to Harry Potter through the movies because mm-hmm. they didn't read the books. So that's what their comparison point's going to be. But I'd love to see what the actual book readers are saying about the TV series when it comes up, because those people will tell us the real deets.
Now, there is some people debate. I want to have this conversation because it annoys me. So when you say reboot, there are people that on the internet that will argue with you left and right that a reboot is only a reboot if you're continuing the story or with the same characters from the original whatever. I take issue with that because, number one, everybody likes to make words whatever they want. So if I say a reboot, I mean they're starting this thing over. They're doing it again. That's what I mean. You can call it a remake, but it's a reboot. For TV, I always just use reboot. It's just my vernacular. I don't right or wrong or whatever. But do you agree with that sentiment, or do you think people just need to relax?
I don't like the term reboot or remake or anything, right? It is a different interpretation of an existing thing. Mm. It's an adaptive flex. That's my word. That's what I'm going to use. It's an adaptive flex.
Okay. I like that.
Because is it a reboot? Sure, because you're going back to the beginning, right? You're going back to book one and starting with book one. So in that sense, yes, it's a reboot. Is it also a remake? Yes, it is, because you're going to do it over 10, 12 episodes instead of 2.5 hours. So you have to remake it completely in a different concept and style in order to make that happen, right? Because you have much more time to fill. So both words, Englishly, because that's what English word, apply to this situation. So yeah, it's an adaptive flex. That's what I'm calling it from now on.
Just, these are reboots to me. They're absolutely reboots. And one of them, we're going to talk about Baywatch. It's a continuation. So, I mean, you can call it something else if you want to, but they're still rebooting the goddamn series. So it's a reboot. But the next one, this is kind of exciting. I'm a big Scooby-Doo fan. They're rebooting Scooby-Doo. It was announced a while ago, and now they've cast McKenna Grace, who's a very talented actress and is literally like in everything. She was just in Regarding You, which I'll talk more about in a second. But she's been cast as Daphne Blake in the series. So they are moving forward with this. And I want to tell you what the story is going to be. It's an origin story. It's going to be live action for Netflix. And during their first summer at camp, old friend Shaggy and Daphne, who's now McKenna Grace, gets embroiled in a haunting mystery surrounding a lonely ghost, Great Dane. God, surrounding a lonely lost Great Dane puppy, I can't read today, that may have been a witness to a supernatural murder. Together with pragmatic and scientific townie Velma and the strange but ever so handsome new kid Freddy, they set out to solve the case that is pulling each of them into a creepy nightmare that threatens to expose all of their secrets. I'm fine with this as long as, okay, they remember that Scooby-Doo had a supernatural undertone, but it was always real people.
Yeah, like it was like, it is a ghost, but it really wasn't a ghost. It was made to look like a ghost, exactly. But it was really a person behind a mask.
It was Hank, the gas station attendant, shit like that.
Would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for you meddling kids and your stupid dog.
That's what better happened. I'm okay with this one. I didn't really love the live action. Interpretation.
Well, yeah, because I think the original live action was then that cheesy time period of filmmaking where you're just trying to grab at straws to get anything to stick, because it's like
that's any different now.
Well, I think the difference now is that I think you have people that are in the executive branch greenlighting this stuff that actually grew up with these properties. Mm-hmm. And so they're actually a little bit more interested in like the nostalgia feel to like make it something that we'll remember, but yet will also be new, versus before it was like people that were just like, oh yeah, I heard about that thing. Let's make that thing. So like, for example, Grace is coming into this, right? McKenna Grace is coming into this. She actually voiced in the animated series. So to bring in the actress that actually is the actress, like that bridge, I think is a great move.
Shoot, the movie Scoob is what you're talking
right.
about.
Right.
The movie Scoob.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny, like full circle for her, right?
Why not?
As long as I get the money for the dog, because that's going to be an expensive effect, no matter what. But I bet it'll look amazing today. Maybe they'll use AI.
Yeah. I mean, they did it for Superman. Why not do it for Scooby?
I'm very happy McKenna Grace got cast in this. I think she is a wonderfully talented actress. It's weird how quickly she's grown up. I mean, I remember when she was just a little kid. Now she's an adult. I mean, her most recent movie, Regretting You, speaking of McKenna Grace, that is now available as well at participating retailers. You can go get that one. When Life Pulls You Down, Love Lifts You Up. Oh, and you can go check that out now. And she's the lead in that one. She's great. I absolutely love her and where her career is going, even if she is in literally everything, like the next Scream movie.
It's their year, you know?
Some people, it's their year. Okay, we're not
done. I want to know how it's going to be with like Fred and Velma and Shaggy, and how the dynamic of the group is going to be in this. That's going to be the key, because it was always fun with Shaggy and Scoob together. But is this going to be focused more on a different look, right? It's a reboot. Let's reboot it. Maybe Daphne's the ringleader this time.
I mean, it would make sense if you're going to have McKenna Grace. I think she's the most popular. Well, I don't know who else they're going to cast, though. They haven't done the cast yet. But what I will say is I can see Netflix kind of doing this a la Wednesday, where they add a lot of supernatural overtones, but they have like, they just have a really, if they find the right tone, which I feel like should be tied to Wednesday in many respects. I mean, it's kind of similar tones. I think this could really work. Really could. It sounds really expensive, you know, CGI dog and all. Okay. But like I said, we're not done, because Fox is going forward with their Baywatch reboot or continuation or whatever you want to call it. And now they have their lead in Stephen Amell. We have failed this beach. He will play Obi Buchanan. Yeah, that's the real character name. It's a Baywatch captain and the son of the legend that is David Hasselhoff's Mitch Buchanan. Hobie is described as a wild child per Variety, with Fox releasing this as the character description. Hobie's world is turned upside down when Charlie, the daughter he never knew, shows up on his doorstep, eager to carry on the Buchanan family legacy and become a Baywatch lifeguard alongside her dad. Man, what do you think about Stephen Amell being a Baywatch guy?
I'm going back to this like character description here. So you're telling me that we have David Hasselhoff's son, mm-hmm. who has a daughter, mm-hmm. and the daughter wants to be a lifeguard like her dad.
That she doesn't know, apparently.
That she doesn't know. But yet the whole Baywatch concept was like the sexualization of the women running down the beach and the hot bods running down the beach. And now you made it a father-daughter story. That seems weird.
Well, I wasn't uncomfortable until that. I mean, I was more concerned about Stephen Amell trying to step in the shoes of the Hoff. All right. I'm sorry. David Hasselhoff. He had a way of winking at the camera. He had a way of kind of like taking the piss out of himself. And I don't think Stephen Amell has that. I've seen him, his follow-up shows, Heels, which is solid. And then he did Suits LA, which was terrible. And he was terrible in it. Sorry. But I don't see, I mean, granted, based on the description, I can't see it. I just can't.
He was Green Arrow. Come on.
Yeah. A real wild child. He never seemed like a fun guy in Arrow. Okay. He never seemed like a fun guy in Heels. He never seemed like a fun guy in, like, this sounds like a fun guy. Hasselhoff, for all his quirks and weirdness, seems like a fun guy.
I don't know. Hobie. What kind of name is that anyway?
It's a stupid name. Stupid. Just stupid.
Hobie seems like a deadbeat dad. Doesn't even know about his daughter. So maybe this is something that brings him to have the joy. Maybe he doesn't want to be a lifeguard. He's just been stuck on this beach because he can't do anything else with his life. Could be a whole interesting take on this.
Oof. I don't get this. And I don't. Now that you said it like that, God, I don't even want to watch this now. I was going to check it out because, I mean, it was always kind of like kitschy fun, the original show. But now you're like, yeah, father, daughter. So he's just going to be like trying to make it just, now it's gross.
Right?
Now it's a category on Pornhub. I don't like it. Not a fan. Not a fan. But I did love the Baywatch movie. I'm not going to lie.
The Baywatch movie's great.
That was so great.
The Baywatch movie totally gets the tone and the campiness of it all, but yet.
Oh my!
It actually felt like it had a story to tell for a change.
Listen, One Direction. Just calling Zac Efron every boy band name throughout the entire movie was a highlight for me.
For sure.
Big fan. All right. So still not done, Troy. There's more. There's freaking more. This is actually a feature film reboot, but it's a TV series and also a film series. But so Good Morning Charlie, because it's coming again, fifth times that, yeah, it's coming, maybe the fifth time. I think they had a Mexican version too, but Sony's in the process of whipping up another feature film reboot of Charlie's Frickin' Angels, and screenwriter Pete Chiarelli, who wrote Crazy Rich Asians, he's been tapped to pen a screenplay for the reboot, and therefore we will have another hunt for another trio of actresses to play detectives of the Townsend private detective agency. What do you say about bringing Charlie's Angels back again?
Okay, don't get me wrong. I don't know anything about this. I'm pitching an idea. If I were to do it, Charlie's Angels.
Oh boy, we're gonna remake this movie, right?
Why can't we have Charlie be a woman instead of a guy, and the angels be guys? In fact, maybe they're gay guys.
Like,
just like if you're gonna reboot it, like let's reboot eye? This thing. Yeah, totally. Like Queer Eye.
Well, I think Charlie was a woman in the last reboot, by the way, just so you know.
Right.
You probably didn't watch it, so I'm just letting you know. I don't know. Maybe that could, sure. Why not? At this point, do something different. I don't know what it is, but you got to do something. I mean, you've tried this. The reason why it worked with the Cameron Diaz and Drew Barrymore section was because they really, amped up they amplified all the things that people remembered about the TV show, the sexualizations. They made it fun. They made it just really cheesy. And Sam Rockwell did a cool dance. I mean, they just made them. They were a couple fun movies. The most recent remake with Glimmer. What's her name? Kristen Stewart. Glimmer. The glitter. The glitter lady is what I was trying to say. And I said Glimmer instead. Can't speak today. Tongue tied. That one was decent. I actually liked the trio. They played it a little more serious. But it's still, you know, I think it's a hard one to crack. It's a very hard one to crack. Maybe they should try something completely different. Or maybe have a mix. You know, guys and girls, you know? Make it like a bigger combo.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be like a specific gender direction, right? It could just be, maybe it's a philanthropic thing. It's people around doing good deeds around town instead of it being a crime thing.
Sure.
It could be like a, what do you call it? Like a True Hope or something, or solving spiritual things or supernatural things. Could be a whole host of things you could do.
Charlie's Angels, but make it supernatural?
Yeah.
Sure. Why not? At this, just do something different, man. Don't do the same thing. Yeah, don't do the same thing.
There's enough, like, solve crime, solve murder, solve whatever on TV. Like, we don't do something new.
And I'm telling you, people, because, you know, whenever I put a post on Facebook, right, or on our social media about whenever these things happen, and you can usually tell what things people get excited about and what things people do not. This, no one got excited about. People were more mad that it was happening as opposed to excited about it. Now, granted, hey, you make something great, changes all perspectives, right? I'm just letting you know, like, the fan base for this is not seemingly that excited. Now, what they are excited about, which surprises the hell out of me, but in an angry way, is that The Rockford Files is getting rebooted as a TV series for NBC. They are getting a literal angel to play Jim Rockford in a reboot of The Rockford Files. David Boreanaz has been confirmed by Variety, and I would say arguably one of the most successful TV actors in history. He is going to play Jim Rockford in this reboot. And there is a fresh log line for the show, and it's a little different than the original series. And it says, newly paroled after doing time for a crime he didn't commit, of course, James Rockford returns to his life as a private investigator, using his charm and wit to solve cases around Los Angeles. Doesn't take long for his quest for legitimacy to land him squarely in the crosshairs of both local police and organized crime. Now, I don't think you watched this one. if I'm not mistaken.
Off and on. I mean, it's a little bit before my time, but, you know, catch reruns here and there when something was on. Like, I would watch it, like, religiously.
Do you remember James Garner in this role?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I can visualize it in my head for sure.
James Garner has a very specific personality, and it's very much he was James Garner, which is charming. He's wry. He's funny and kind of a lady killer. I absolutely can see this working. I think David Boreanaz has a lot of charm and a lot of, if you watch Bones, if you watch SEAL Team, you watched Angel, you watch Buffy. I mean, he's been on TV consistently for like 3 decades, and he's showcased a lot of the different aspects for what the character is going to be. And I think he'll make it his own. Now, I don't think he's going to be James Garner, because there is no James Garner except James Garner. But I think he can make this his own. And most people under our generation have never even heard of the Rockford Files.
And I think that's the key. Like, when you do these reboots or remakes or whatever, restarts, whatever you want to call them, you have to give enough time for it to pass. Because I think then you can say, you have a generation that's just about to phase out, and they can be like, oh yeah, I remember that show. It was like blah, 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 blah. And you have conversations between maybe grandparents and older grandkids or whatnot. And you get a nostalgic feel to it, but it's not like, oh my gosh, that show just ended. Why are they remaking that again? Kind of hate that kind of fuels the internet keyboard warriors. I think this is great. I think this is a good way to pull back from your past archives and say, hey, here's something from the past we can make new and fresh. Mm-hmm. We can have somebody that looks just as dreamy and handsome as James Garner did back in the day. We could even like pull some cool things in with a private investigative angle to it. Maybe Veronica Mars shows up and works at a, you know, PI firm down the street, and they're competing in an episode. Would be kind of fun to pull in Kristen Bell for a guest appearance. I don't know.
It's a bit of a stretch. I'd rather have Emily Deschanel show up.
I'd do that too.
From Bones.
That'd be great. Yeah. Right.
She's doing another pilot for NBC where she's solving crime. So yeah, they could totally tie those together.
I see it right now. The Wednesday night crossover app.
Bam. Gonna happen. Well, you know, that's what they thrive on, right? Like these franchises and reboots. Now, we did recently have, not too long ago, we had Hawaii Five-O and MacGyver and Magnum PI. Those were all series reboots that were fairly successful for CBS. So there's an audience for this, right? There's an audience that remembers the original, and there's a lot of, they want to share it with their kids or whatever. Like, hey, this is a show I watch, but now it's a new guy. Maybe you'll like it. And I could see it. And I just like David Boreanaz. And the guy has a track record that's unrivaled in television.
Yeah. Hardest working man that doesn't really have to work.
Yeah. I'm sure he's got enough money to be fine. He just likes to work. Yeah. So I think this will be good.
I like it. I like it.
I do too. And that, I think, is the last reboot. Now we're finally done. But sure, I want to go back to something you said. You made a very, very good point, and you make a lot of other points that I don't find as good. But this one was very good.
I was going to say, 45 minutes into the episode, yep, right? The time finally stamped down.
Nailed it. No, but it's the desire. It's that you've gone long enough without the same thing. Now you can try and bring the same thing back. That's when a remake or reboot really works. Like Charlie's Angels, they keep doing it. So it's we remember that they've kept doing it. The Rockford Files, we haven't had it. So it will seem fresh to people.
I mean, The Burbs. I think The Burbs is a good example. Just started, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I didn't get to watch it yet.
I haven't watched it.
There's enough time space between there. Because apparently I found out that 1980s wasn't 20 years ago.
No, it's like 40, man. Yeah.
It feels like it, but yeah, no, it's not.
But it's not that long ago for me because I watch The Burbs all the time. I still rewatch it pretty frequently. So it's not quite Clue or anything, but you know, it gets a rewatch every couple of years.
They can't remake Clue ever.
Not the same way. Make it a real murder mystery or something like that, but you can't remake Clue. No, not the way that. No. Nope. Hey, what you been watching? Anything you've watched recently?
I'm in on The Hijack on Apple TV Plus season 2. Didn't think that they'd be able to do another season after the events of the first season with the plane hijacking. But
hey. Before you continue, they dropped the plus, sir. It's just Apple TV now.
That's right. I'm sorry.
You should know in your contract that you can't say the plus.
I hit the skip intro button. I don't watch the opening logo.
I got a point about that, but I'll come back to that. You go ahead. Finish what you're saying.
But Hijack's actually really good. You know, the twist that they did on this, I don't think this would be giving anything away. But Idris Elba hijacks the subway train in the first episode, and he's the hijacker.
I'm sure there's more to that, though.
Of course there's more to that. Yes. But it was an interesting way to be like, oh, okay, well, then I'll watch the second episode and the third episode. And it's actually a really interesting season thus far, and how it actually ties back into the first season is good. So you do need a little bit of the first season to understand what's going on in the second. But second season so far, I'm 6 episodes in and loving it.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Now, back to that skip intro point that I wanted to make. Don't you think they should have like a always skip intro button? Like a, it should be a setting.
I mean, I guess I've never not seen it.
I've never seen the setting. If there is a setting, I don't know where I've looked everywhere just because
I've never seen a setting, but I've also never not seen the skip intro button has always been there for me.
I know. But what I'm saying, like you always have to push it. I would like an option to skip intros of all shows.
I said from the beginning of Only Murders in the Building that there's changes in the opening credits that are important to the show.
Agreed.
Right. But from the beginning. And then I watched every week and it never happened and it never happened and it never happened. And then one episode, it actually did happen. And so because of that, I want the ability to be able to say, I want to watch the credits or I don't want to watch the credits. If I feel like it's not something that would change, like hijacks are very similar for the second season. They're completely different credits from the first season. But the credits for the second season have not varied. So yes, at this point, I'm going to skip intro. But Only Murders in the Building, I watch the credits every time.
So you wouldn't, but wouldn't you like that option?
The option's there. It says skip intro. It holds for 10 seconds.
Get off
and
your
then
point.
And then
listen to what I'm saying. For people that don't care about any of that, because I don't care. I have never watched an intro I wasn't forced to since they introduced this. I have not. Maybe Game of Thrones is probably an exception, but I want the ability.
You're the grumpy old man that just auto-pushes the button. Point.
I want the ability to say, check a box. You're too lazy to go
click once.
You're not even listening to me. You just don't listen when I talk. I want the ability, and I think it should be based on everybody's different user experience. If I don't want to and you do, great. You go do. You watch your Only Murders in the Building intro every freaking week. Enjoy it. But I want a box where I can check it and I never have to do it. I'm sure there's probably some SAG reason for it, but I think if you can already skip the intro, give me the option to just generically skip every intro because I never want to see another one again.
Yeah, because that one push of the button on the remote is hard for you.
You're missing okay, that's for you. Now, the funny thing is if it's something that you thought was a good idea, you'd be all over like, well, I don't know why it's just not an option. They should just give me the option because Troy Heinrich, he wants it. But I'm saying that and you're like, no, it's terrible because you want to watch your one intro where it mattered.
The setting is there probably and you just can't find it. So you still can't find how to unsubscribe from Peacock.
It's not there, but that is true. It is very hard to unsubscribe from Peacock. It's all another story. All right. Well, I did start watching Cross season 2. And definitely, I think the season's better than the first one. I really liked the first season, but it's better than that. Cross is back and he's working with another agency. You know, if you've seen the first season, you know who. I don't really want to spoil anything, but he's tracking down murderer of serial killers that are connected to billionaires, which I'm sure will get everybody excited. It's very good. Aldous Hodge, man, he's just a dude that he's just cool. I do think they give him a little bit more opportunities to be to show the funnier side of Aldous Hodge, because he's a very funny guy. He really is like a genuinely funny guy. And if you saw Leverage, you would know that. I mean,
Leverage is great.
He's always funny there. But here it's a much darker, more serious character, but they give him more opportunities to be more relatable. And
I'm glad season 2 is better than, not better than, but as good as and continuing to grow.
No, it's better. It's better. The first one had some ups and downs. I'm not going to.
That's why I gave up on it.
Yeah. It wasn't perfect. And I think this season is much more in line with what you expected the first season to be. So, and then also I saw Shelter. I don't know when it's going to hit digital. It's probably out of theaters by the time you hear this, but it's Jason Statham's new movie. And he takes in a young girl and he has to protect her and get her to safety because a whole lot of mercenaries are coming for him. Now, I like the movie. I think Jason Statham actually got to show a different side of him. But eventually you do hear the thing you hear in every Jason Statham movie, which is when his adversary says to someone else, he's a precision instrument, just a man, unstoppable force, that kind of shit. And that's where you just start rolling your eyes going, do you guys, like, is it the same script? Did you just chat GPT this or what? And just let him kick a lot of ass? Because it was actually a little bit different of a story until that moment, which made me go, ugh, stop it. But it's good.
I did see the Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die.
And verdict.
I don't want to swear because then Aaron will have to cut it out. But it's like bleeping amazing.
Is oh my it? God, okay,
it was
cool.
So good. It was so good. I literally got done and I was like, I'm watching that again. There's an Aaron there showing right now. Oh, shit. It's 10 o'clock.
So I didn't oversell it.
No, it's great.
Okay.
It is so good. I have thoughts about it, but I don't want to say anything because it'll give away the ending. So, but I have to talk about it with Aaron offline because I have thoughts.
Well, we'll have to talk about that. But I am very sad it did not do Big Business. It'll be a cult. Hopefully it'll hit streaming at some point and then everybody will find it.
And what's the comparison to Everything Everywhere All at Once and how it did? Is it the same track record?
Not even close.
Yeah. Box office wise. No. It did more. Everything did more because Michelle Yeoh and
I think that just the buzz was there, you know?
I think that's the one thing that falters for this. It's like it doesn't have such a big name cast to get a draw.
It's true. They're all pretty character actory.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great film though. I hope people find it when it hits video, when it's streaming. You know, Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die. The title's not great, but neither was Everything Everywhere All at Once. And right. Also that was tying into a real, well, I think they both are a real prescient moment because that was in, you know, multiverses were kind of all the rage at the time and it really worked for that period of time. This is more focused on technology and its impact on all of us. And maybe people are a little too tired of that, weary of it at this point, tired of hearing the term AI.
I can see that. But it also had more of like, it wasn't just about AI though. It was about social programming and kids' attachment to their devices.
Numbness. Like, numbness.
So we're talking about the Toy Story 5.
Yeah.
You know, the devices are being introduced and are we introducing them too early? And there's a lot of good things in Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die, just besides the story and the action itself. It's a lot of things to think about when you come out of that one.
I really hope more people find it. I really, really do. And that's going to do it for this week. So thanks for joining me for this, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's always a good time.
And remember, guys, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, the next reboot, because apparently that was just on the last week and a half. I can't imagine how many more we're going to have for the next couple of weeks. I can't believe there's so many just happening all at once. But buy popcorn. I tell you, I threw my popcorn maker away.
You did not.
They're so hard to clean. It got to the point where I chose chaos. I said, I can't do this anymore. Like I gotta pitch this and I'm going to have to get another one.
You didn't even give it to like a church or like a youth center or something.
I gave it to a dumpster. That's what I did.
That's a bummer.
I know. But I said goodbye. Somewhere Oscar the Grouch can pop popcorn now.